There.
What am I looking for again?
The Olympus Mons. It's the largest mountain in the solar system.
I see a little bump. Now can we spy on the neighbors?
No.
Now that little bump happens to be the best skiing on Mars, and that's where we're going for our winter vacation.
We're going to Mars?
It's a trek, but it's worth it.
Oh, you'll love the red planet. It's so pretty, and the sky is pink.
So what are the Martians like?
Martians?
Aren't there Martians?
No, geez, Sabrina. Get in touch with reality. Fighting in the dance hall.
Is there life on Mars? Ladies, gentlemen, Gordon Gano, welcome to episode number 16 of Sabrina's Witch Trials. This is, of course, the show where each episode I grab a friend and venture back into the mid-1990s to rewatch, review, and reminisce all about everyone's favorite Friday Night Spellfest, Sabrina, the Teenage Witch. I'm Alex Adouju, and in case you're wondering, folks, this episode is sponsored by umbrellas. Get wet when you intend to with umbrellas. Real exciting show this episode, because not only are we going to a different planet, it's Mars, we've got quite the fun guest back to do another episode. I think his fourth, if memory serves. He's my brother and yours, mostly mine, and noted child of the 80s, Phil Adouju's here. Phil, welcome back.
Hello, Al. How are you?
I'm doing just dandy. How are you doing? I've got this podcasting thing down.
This is what makes you the best at what you do. Right? I'm doing very well. Things are good in life, so, you know, can't ask for anything else.
Can't ask for much more. You just celebrated your birthday?
I did. My birthday was on the 24th. I am now officially 35 years old. So I've moved on from the 18 to... I'm on the top age of the 18 to 35 bracket there.
That's right. Your opinion no longer matters to add sellers.
It won't next year.
Not me. I've got just another decade of influencing companies to make bad decisions.
Absolutely.
Ooh, people seem to like hoverboards. Al sure likes them. I actually hate them. Every time I see somebody on one of them, like always on a sidewalk, I just want to push them off it.
I mean, come on, lazy walk. I mean, come on, really? Like, and the best... you have to hover around. It's not even hovering. You're on the wheels. Like, if it was like a real hoverboard, I'd be like, Okay, that's cool. You have wheels.
And the thing is, all these people are getting horribly injured by falling like 6 inches.
I like that they're exploding. You know, like we talked before, I work for a package delivery company that cannot be named.
You brought it up this time, so you've got to mute it out of the show.
Well, I can say that. That's about all I could say, though. Yes, we've had issues nationwide with them exploding.
Man, just buy shoes and walk.
Yeah, pretty much. Your shoes will never explode, right?
There you go. This episode's also sponsored by shoes. It won't explode.
How's your endorsement deals going, Al? Have you achieved it? I know you tried to push real hard for Harry's the other last episode.
I did. Didn't get Harry's to hit me back. They're still great razors. I'll say that for one more episode until
you know
they
what?
Don't.
I'm a big fan of Harry's. I just want to throw that out there. Harry's.com. If you can help my brother out, please do.
They are legitimately great razors.
They are pretty good.
They last a long time, like longer than your average razor.
I used the standard National brand before, and they were not as good as Harry's was.
Oh, God. They're like garbage. I wouldn't shave my taint with them.
Can you say that on this show?
Why not? I can say...
Wait, we're on a podcast. We can say whatever we want, right?
That's right. And the best part of like any show or any media at all is when the stuck-up guy who only says highfalutin words says words like taint.
Taint.
You know what I mean?
I mean, you put a big smile on my face when you said that word. I'm not going to lie.
Just bottom of the barrel shit. That's what it's about. Look out for more. I'm just going to sprinkle taints throughout the episode.
Isn't this show about something called Sabrina the Teenage Witch, though?
You know what, Phil? Taint. It really is. And, of course, we're here to talk about Sabrina the Teenage Witch and the 16th episode, as I said, Mars Attracts. Now, Phil, you are a returning hero to the podcast here. You've done this a couple of times.
A few of my day, yes.
You know that the first thing I ask of all my guests is to describe the episode we watched in a set number of words. This episode, I think you should describe Mars Attracts in 11 words.
Ooh, 11. Well, Al, I think I'm ready.
Okay, Phil, 11 words. Describe this episode. Let me have it.
All right. Doug tries to kiss Sabrina, but is denied. Harvey gets clothes.
I believe that's 11, Phil, but my math skills are not as great as they never were, so I'm sure somebody will tell us if that's not 11.
And if it's not, please, you know, send us a message on Facebook or Instagram.
That's right. Facebook.com/Sabrina's Witch Trials, Instagram.com/Sabrina's Witch Trials, and on Twitter, Twitter.com/Sabrina Podcast.
We're shameless plugging.
Hey, you can't set me up and not expect me to take the fucking bait.
I know. I just threw it up, didn't I? I just set it up there.
Fucking give T-ball. Me the alley. Anyway, absolutely correct description of this episode. Harvey is really jazzed about his new socks, but we'll get there. Episode number 16, Mars Attracts, first aired February 7th, 1997, to 15.3 million viewers, a 9.5 rating, a 16 share, and this was the 30th most viewed piece of broadcast TV that week. Still pretty impressive when you consider it's a show for kids.
That's pretty good numbers.
All right, we open in the Spellman dining room, where the aunties are marveling at how Sabrina ate all her food, including the bane of all teen existence, her lima beans. Sabrina just tells them that she likes lima beans, and when Zelda asks if she used magic to get rid of them, Sabrina says she's offended and quickly scampers off to clear the table. As she leaves, Hilda notes how being a witch is obviously just the tip of her weirdness, and Zelda asks if she noticed how cagey Sabrina was when Zelda asked her about the beans. Zelda says she remembers a spell that her mother used when her and Hilda were kids to make sure that they ate their veggies, and Hilda notes that she hated that spell.
There's still something fishy. Did you notice how she dodged my question?
Oh, come on. Sabrina's not that cagey.
Well, there's only one way to find out. Remember that spell Mom used to cast to make sure we'd eaten all our vegetables?
Oh, I hated that spell.
Zelda then casts it as Sabrina enters the room again, and when Zelda explains that it brings back all the vegetables she zapped away, Sabrina just tells them to duck down real quick, as they are soon pelted with an avalanche of lima beans. Hilda just notes once more that she told Zelda she hated that spell as we go to the opening.
Get down! I told you I hated that spell.
Phil.
Yes, sir.
First pertinent question that has to be asked. Are you a fan of lima beans?
You know what? That's a great question because I was going to ask you that question, ironically. Mm. I am not a fan of lima beans.
You know what's funny is, like, the lima beans are one of those things that, like, TV families are always featured hating, especially kids. I had never really eaten them until I was an adult, and I really do like them. I think they're good. They're a bean that holds up well. They have a nice flavor. I like beans in general, but I do like lima beans.
I mean, I can't even remember. I mean, I in my childhood, I remember eating them.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I don't really have, not that I remember like a serious like disdain for them. I just really can't remember like what they taste like or, you know.
Yeah.
I like a good old chili bean. Those are what I like. I like chili beans. Kidney like beans. Nice, those are good too. Black
nice
beans.
Black beans. Those are all good.
Those are all
good. There you go. You get to talk about beans, and you get to hear what I shave my taint with. So it's an exciting episode for everyone included.
Harry's.com.
That's right. Taint's choice. I thought one of the things that I couldn't stop staring at and turned out to be incredibly distracting in this opening was Sabrina's powder blue kind of suede button down she was wearing with like hippie flowers on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
What the hell? Where did she buy it? It looks like she raided a nursing home. Like,
maybe she got it from grandma's closet.
It looks like it. I mean, it's ridiculous. The color is just not fun at all. It's the wrong kind of blue to use with like that suede material. I didn't like it. Phil, what did you think about Hilda and Zelda's reaction to the beans?
In which way? Like when it fell on them?
Yeah, because to me they seemed surprised, which makes no sense because they experienced this as kids.
Right. It seemed like they didn't know what was going on. Like, oh, they're going to materialize and fall on top of me.
Right.
Like you did not know that? It happened before in your life.
Zelda suspects that Sabrina made them disappear. This is what's going to happen, and you know that because it happened to you as kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they believed that she actually ate them and nothing was going to appear.
No, you know Zelda knew. Hilda was falling for it, but Zelda's got her eye on the ball.
I know.
Also, those beans were definitely uncooked because when they clatter down, they like smack and bounce off. There is no like squishing going on.
No, they wanted to make sure it was an easy cleanup on the set there.
Also, they probably just like put them in a stew for craft services the next day.
We're having lima bean stew.
We're having definitely not floor lima bean stew.
Do you think they make the lima bean stew in a big cauldron?
You know what? No, it probably it costs too much. They just use like a back of a car or something, like an old rusted out trunk of a car.
But yeah, for the opening, that's all I have, my friend.
All right, then we move right along to nighttime, where the Spellmans are on their back porch looking through a telescope, and Hilda tells Sabrina to look for the Olympus Mons, the largest mountain on Mars. Sabrina says she just sees a little bump and decides to start spying on her neighbors because she's a creep. But Hilda soon explains that little bump has the best skiing on Mars, and that's where they're going for winter vacation. Sabrina is quickly stoked, there's an adjective, as Zelda says that it's worth the trek, and Hilda tells her that she loves the red planet and its pink sky. The aunties then get a little snotty when Sabrina asks what the Martians are like. They go on to tell her that there are no Martians, get in touch with reality. The next day in class, a new teacher, Miss Hecht, I'm going to say Hecht, H-E-C-H-T, tries to do some teaching about Louis XV before realizing how ready for winter break the whole class is and just telling them to keep it down until the bell rings, which is honestly the smartest thing to do before a winter break. You're not going to get anything in their minds.
Nope.
Harvey soon asks Sabrina what her vacation plans are, and she tells him that she's going skiing up north, which is not actually how directions work with planets. It's not north. But that's besides the point. You guys are a smart audience. You probably already knew that. She then asks about his plans, and as the bell rings, he tells her that he's just going to be hanging around town, and in fact, he was hoping that they could do stuff together. Sabrina is soon dejected, telling Harvey she wishes she knew, as she loves doing stuff.
How about you?
I'll be here. In fact, I was hoping you'd be here too, so maybe we could do stuff.
Really? I wish I had known. I love doing stuff.
And adds that this trip is going to suck since she can't ski. Harvey tells her that she can just take lessons, and she just goes on to complain about having to do homework on vacation. It's really kind of irritating for a girl who's going on a ski trip to be all, oh God, woe is me. It's like, my life was Harvey's life. I sat at home during winter vacation and watched, like, Jenny Jones.
That's true. True story.
Yes. In fact, I have vivid memories of one time. I think it was... I think it was Jenny Jones. Because you're obviously older than me. You were watching it, and there was a girl on there who wanted to be a porn star. And, like, her parents were trying to talk her out of it. But I didn't know what the word porn meant, so I thought she was saying she wanted to be a corn star. And for the life of me, I could not figure out what the fuck a corn star was. Like, what the hell does that mean? Anyway,
that's great.
Sabrina won't be experiencing that because she's going on a ski trip. Anyway, he tells her that she'll be fine and she'll see him and he'll see her in 5 days, but she soon corrects that to 6 days, and he winces at the idea of being with no Sabrina for 6 days. Sabrina then says she has to go catch her bus, so they shake hands and say goodbye, and after Harvey walks off, Sabrina sells the handshake like she was just aggressively fucked. At home, Sabrina is again irritatingly complaining about having to go on a ski vacation as it ruins her plans to do stuff with Harvey. She offers to just stay home with Salem, but he notes that them going away is his vacation, so get the fuck out. Phil.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about the new teacher, Miss Hecht, who I believe we never see again.
So it's funny that you bring her up, because I was going to ask you, I actually researched the answer, and I was like, oh, I'm going to throw Al off. But of course, Al just like rolls out with this Sabrina knowledge, like, you know, like the master of Sabrina.
It's almost like I have a podcast about a 20-year-old teen show.
I know. So yes, we meet Miss Hecht, who is the, I guess, history teacher, because they're talking about Louis the 14th.
Yep.
And we are never to see her again, at least to my knowledge, to what I remember.
I don't believe she does return. There's another new teacher in the Crucible episode in a little while, but I don't believe Miss Hecht returns. She definitely also does rank towards the bottom of Sabrina's many teachers. You know, below Mr. Rothwell, below Mr. Poole, below Mr. Kraft, Miss Quick, especially Mrs. Bazigian.
I mean, come on, Miss Bazigian's got, is like top two.
Oh, gosh. I wish they would bring her back for more. Honestly, they can't because the show ended 13 years ago, but still, bring her back.
But in any case, it's like, why couldn't Mr. Poole they just cut to Mr. Poole class, you know, for two seconds? Because literally, that's how long it's on TV.
You know why? Probably why? They would have had to pay Paul Feig a real salary, as where this actress, they could give her like $20.
Do you know who the actress's name is?
That I don't know.
Oh, I have I have stumped the master.
Don't
run to IMDb and try to look it up now.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
I know.
Is it Sandra Spriggs?
That's her. That's Sandra Spriggs, who is never to be seen, actually, really, again. I mean,
in anything.
Her credits are like a episode of Martin. like that. It's something crazy like that. But yes, that's who plays her. And then one of the things that, at least in these few scenes, that gets me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they have, you know, they're talking about their, you know, winter break, and they're talking about, you know, Harvey's like, oh, you'll be gone for 5 days. But she goes, well, no, it's six. Then Harvey like kind of like, oh, so he sits there like, so I'm thinking to myself, so Harvey's okay with 5 days, but the 6 day really is going to blow him apart.
He's going to get so sick of masturbating by day five that he's really going to need her back. That's right. I've thrown the chains of polite society away, Phil.
I don't know about the chains. I think you just drop this thing into the gutter.
That's right.
But in any case, I was really, I just shook my head like, okay, so you were fine with five, but six is what's really going to throw you apart.
Come on, you'll have a blast, and I'll see you in 5 days?
Six.
Man, 6 days.
But maybe he really wasn't fine with five, but he was just like acting all big and tough. And it's like, no, five. Five's nothing. No, it's six. Oh, come on. No, I mean, go skiing. Yeah, whatever. No, but I think the whole, this is where we start the episode long trend of loin shaking handshakes.
Yes.
I get the joke. I get what the joke is, but I don't know if handshakes are really going to make anyone like light up a cigarette afterwards. I mean, I probably just need to start shaking Nate Richards' hand more.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. I mean, I was about their age that they play in this part, in these parts. So, I mean, I was in high school in 97, so, I mean, it made sense to me, but Am I gonna tell you that in high school that we, someone as that were developing that would shake their hand? Probably not a handshake, probably a hug.
Right.
I mean, I thought that would have been a little bit more convincing. I understand why they went for the handshake, because it tries to show you a little bit more like, you know, he's trying to be proper, but she wants a little bit more than just a handshake.
Right. Look at what he can do to Sabrina with just a handshake.
I know. Well, we'll learn a little bit later about what he can do to her to just a handshake.
New socks and everything. one last thing that I noted here. When Sabrina and Harvey leave the classroom, there's a poster behind them that says, quote, sometimes the best medicine might just be a wish come true. What the fuck does that mean?
I mean, that's pretty 90s fare, if I remember correctly. I mean,
like the phrases, the best medicine, laughter is the best medicine, a wish come true, every motivational poster. But that phrase doesn't make any sense.
I mean, it was probably something they got at the bottom of a bargain bin somewhere.
I mean, if you're sick, the best medicine is like a wish come true because you feel better. That's like one of those like reject posters that like companies print by accident and have to throw out. But like the set designer was just like, we'll take them. We just need to cover the walls in something. It's fine. No one will go back and read these.
Yes. No one will come back 25 years later and try to watch this.
I fucking caught you red-handed, set designer. All right. Anyway, Sabrina eventually pouts, saying that she'll go to Mars, but she won't have any fun. Hilda tells her that she's making a mistake, as it's not like she'll never see Harvey again, and to her surprise, when she answers the door, there's Harvey!
I mean, it's not like you're never gonna see Harvey ever again. Here he is now! Don't you love when things like that happen in real life?
Hey, hi.
I hope it's okay, I stopped by.
Sure, your timing's perfect. My aunts were just about to take naps.
Oh, right. Oh, so tired.
Oh, I hope I can make it up the stairs.
As he asks if it's okay that he stopped by, Sabrina says that it's the perfect time because her aunts were getting ready to go take their old lady naps. Winkety wink, wink, wink. The aunts then get the message and head upstairs yawning and worrying about climbing all those big, heavy stairs. But this is when Harvey and Sabrina get down to business, Harvey noting that he was worried about her losing her mittens while skiing, and he gives her a set of mitten minders, saying that his little brother swears by these glove suspenders. They're really, really great. This is an awesome gift the guy you're interested in is giving you. Sabrina thanks him for the stretchy gift, and before he leaves, asks if she can call him from the lodge to let him know how the minders are working out, to which he says sure, around 9 that night. They both then say cool, as does Salem for some reason, and Sabrina quickly and unconvincingly blames it on the creaks of a settling house as Harvey heads out to return the car to his mom. He and Sabrina then hand fuck one more time, and Sabrina gives Salem a what-the-fuck look after he leaves about him, talking as a cat, but he explains that he was just caught up in the moment. Later, by the linen closet, the aunties, all ski-bunnied up, call to Sabrina so that they can leave, and she soon arrives toting a huge amount of ski equipment, before marveling at how little the aunts have packed. Hilda wisely explains that they are fucking witches, and the aunties give Salem some last-minute warnings about conserving his food and not throwing any parties, which he snottily dismisses. They then leave with a sarcastic Sabrina giving us a very pessimistic woo-hoo.
Woo-hoo.
Thank you. And Salem overly sweetly saying goodbye to them. I thought Nate Richard actually does a great job of being like an obvious prick. Not really prick, but just like obviously he's disingenuous.
Bye. Have fun. Miss you.
A party? Why didn't I think of that?
Once they're gone, however, Salem wonders why he hadn't thought of the idea of a party before. Phil.
Yes, sir.
So let's go back to Harvey's little stop by. Mittenminders.
Yeah, so before that, Harvey comes in his plaid coat that is pretty terrible looking. It literally looks like something like Red Skeleton would wear as like a joke, you know, like a hobo joke of some sort.
One, I love that you made a Red Skeleton reference. Two, I'm so glad you're my brother, because my first note is, let's start with the most egregious problem here, Harvey's outfit.
There you go. I mean, literally, see, but for those of you who don't know who Red Skeleton is, he was a comedian in the, probably, the 60s or so, Al?
Oh, no, like the 40s and 50s.
So he would wear like these weird like coats and stuff, but it literally looked like something he picked out of his closet. It was terrible looking.
His coat is made dramatically worse by the fact that he's wearing like a red, like brown and green plaid coat over a blue, gray, and brown plaid shirt.
Yeah, I mean it's terrible. I mean it's just like plaid it's just run amok on Harvey.
He looks like he went to Kurt Cobain's fucking estate sale. He's ridiculous.
Pretty much, yeah.
At one point, he's standing in that outfit next to Caroline Ray, who's wearing similarly terrible plaids. It's just way too much plaid for one shot. I mean,
I tell you what, though, when they're standing next to each other, I mean, his eclipses hers like no other.
Yeah, no, because she's like somewhat tasteful, and he's just like, I know plaid shirts are cool. I'm gonna really impress her. I'm gonna wear plaid everything.
I mean, even some of her. I mean, the plaid that she was wearing, I could see some people wear that nowadays. I mean, it looks, you know, somewhat contemporary still.
Yeah.
I mean, his is just like, it looks almost comically plaid. Like, it's like,
comically bad.
Well, yes, it is comically bad. And then we go on to the Mittenminders,
yes,
which, you know, I thought it was a sweet gesture by Harvey. You know, mm-hmm, hey, she's going away. I'll give her something that she can think about me. You know, when she has, but really, bro, Mittenminders, like, mm-hmm, that's what you went with.
He found his in. I was thinking about you skiing, and I got you. Well, he can't be like, I got you this long underwear.
Well, no, but he could be like, hey, he could have bought her a pair of mittens. Like,
that's true.
It's like, here's a pair of mittens. I know you'll be cold or something.
But no, it is.
I will get you these elastic suspenders that will hold your mittens. That way you'll never lose them.
It is kind of adorably Harvey, though, that he, this is what he thinks is going to impress Sabrina. Like, oh, he's such a little delt.
I mean, he's like, he is the lovable scamp, though, because, like, you're like, you see what he's trying to do, mm-hmm, and you're like, I see what kind of game you're trying to play on her. I see what you're trying to do.
I do agree with you, though, but I think the whole scene is really good, and I think it's really sweet. Like, it's a really genuine scene between Harvey and Sabrina. And I harp on this a lot, but I like how this show kind of subverts the expectations of a courtship story, because, you know, usually the male is the chaser, the pursuer, and the female is very passive, and, you know, but Harvey is rather, you know, while he is being the pursuer in this scene, he is really shy and tentative, and, you know, it's refreshing, I think.
They're called Mittenminders. You string them through your jacket. My little brother swears by them.
That's so thoughtful and stretchy. Thanks.
Anyway, I gotta get the car back to my mom.
Hey, maybe I could call you from the lodge, let you know how the Mittenminders are working.
Really? I'd like that. I'd like that a lot.
Well, when should I call?
Tonight around 9?
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, I think that she still is the pursuer, but you can see that he actually has, like, he thinks about her. Like, he thinks of her, and he wants her to think of him.
Right.
So it's like, you know, I got you a little something for your trip. Right. Here you go. And, you know, yeah, he kind of plays it off as, you know, my little brother likes them, and I thought you might like them. But you kind of see, if you could kind of see the blooming, you kind of see the blooming of their relationship.
Yep. And I think Nate Richards' performance here really kind of captures like the bashfulness of being a teen. You know, he's very like, oh, I got you this present, and he shakes her hand, and I think it's a really sweet scene and very well acted.
And as you said about the handshake, you know, the handshake fucking, as you said.
Oh yeah, hand fucking 2.0.
The hand fucking. I think it's it comes down to, you know, it's like they want her to be more, but they don't. One of them has to take that extra step, and either one is scared to, mm-hmm. I think they're both scared to, but I think one wants to. You know, he's scared to make that move because he doesn't want to lose her, probably as a friend.
Right.
And she's just like, come on, dummy, just do it.
Right. I do also love the fact that when Salem starts talking, Sabrina tries to cover up his talking by blaming it on the creaking of the house by saying the word creak. Like, she starts out like, oh, creak, oh, creak, moan, oh, man, this house is really... Oh, it's settling. Like, it's incredible for how unconvincing it is. I loved it.
Oh, creak! Oh, these old homes are so creaky. Well, you'd better get going.
And I know you kind of touched this a little bit on last episode, but the mm-hmm. animatronics of Salem have gotten light years ahead of where they started.
Yes, he's not terrifying to little kids anymore.
No, you could almost see it being like an actual cat doing it.
He looks kind of scruffy.
Exactly. He looks a little scruffy, but it's not like the, you know, button eyes and like matted hair that we had like, you know, episode 1 and 2.
And the weirdly like, accurate mouth, but incredibly inaccurate everything else.
Yes. And like, you know, I'm just wait, like, you're just waiting for the head to start spinning around or something like, oh, you know, we have an issue. Disorder.
Danger, Will
danger,
Robinson.
Danger. Exactly. So
it is an improvement.
It is a vast improvement, I believe.
All right, let's go to Mars, Phil.
Let's go.
On Mars, the Spellmans enter to what I thought was an impressive lodge set, an ice lodge set, as Zelda makes a joke about the steps being a little icy. Hilda tells us that it's the perfect time of year right now to visit the ice lodge because at the end of the season, the rooms get a little slushy, before showing Sabrina the erupting volcano in the center of the ice lodge. No one sees a problem there. The Spellmans then set their plans. Zelda is getting an energy bar and hitting the slopes, while Hilda is hitting the couch with a gargantuan pile of magazines, catalogs, and Tolstoy's War and Peace, which she plans to save for last. Sabrina complains that there's little family in this family reunion, so they agree to meet for dinner, but Sabs still has nothing to do. Upset, she decides to go call Harvey, but Zelda stops her, explaining Mars is in a time zone that's so far ahead of Earth, it's still yesterday there, and Hilda adds that if she did call Harvey, he would explode.
I'm calling Harvey.
Oh, you can't. Mars is in a time zone that's so far ahead of Earth, it's still yesterday there.
If you call Harvey, he'll explode.
I love that. Sabrina then stomps off upset, but Zelda just says that when she finds the Toblerone in the minibar, she'll be so happy. The aunties then go about their days, as we get a montage of Beth Broderick green screen skiing, which is not an easy phrase to say, intercut with shots of Caroline Ray, not so much reading as forcefully flipping through and hurling periodicals around. Zelda soon returns tired, and an exhausted Hilda asks her to read War and Peace to her. She doesn't. The next day, Hilda walks up to Zelda having breakfast and asks if she's going skiing again, which she is. But when Zelda asks if Hilda's planning on reading again, Hilda tells her no, she's just going to be taking it easy today. Throw around, I don't know, like a pillow, something less heavy than a magazine. Sabrina then comes up, noting that she slept well in her bed, though the problem was she woke up here. Zelda says, don't worry, she's booked Sabrina a ski lesson, or she's going to book her a ski lesson, but Sabrina says she already has great plans, analyzing the aunties in her journal until 9, and then calling Harvey. She soon heads off to the payphone to wait for 9 o'clock. Phil.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about the lodge set first.
Okay.
I don't know about you. I thought it was light years better than could be expected of an ice lodge set from Sabrina the Teenage Witch in 1997. It looks convincing to me.
It's pretty good. I mean, I have to agree with you. I mean, it looked really good.
It's a little small, but that's, you know, that's just the reason. It's
small,
a set.
And you know, I think they made it. They wanted it to look a little. They wanted it to be small because mm-hmm. that way it looked like there was a lot of people there. They try to like kind of cram people in there,
right? Especially helpful in the disco scene. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God. We'll get to that. So you know, we find out about the Toblerone, which, you know, if you're a child of the 90s, you actually had a Toblerone, and they are pretty good.
I can tell you, I've never had one.
They're pretty good. That's if I remember correctly, I think it's like chocolate and almonds, or chocolate and hazelnut, or something like that. But it's okay. I mean, it's chocolate and nuts. I mean, what's not to like? The blue screen shots, though. I mean, let me tell you something. All right. I mean, I remember watching shows in the 90s with blue screens, and these were obviously terrible. I mean, these were like. These could have been blue screen shots from the 60s.
Like, I think it's almost intentionally bad because they know they can't do it really well. So it's like, let's at least make a joke out of it.
It must have been because it was awful. Like, it was almost unbearable to watch.
Like watching like the shots of like what's supposed to be Zelda skiing and then cutting to Zelda skiing reminded me so much of like a Mentos commercial from 1994.
It reminded me of like I don't know, maybe something out of like a cop show in the 60s where, you know, they're chasing after a guy and you see like the screen, you know, they're just moving the steering wheel to the left and right real fast like they're driving. Like, you're not driving.
Yeah.
I mean,
or like a really bad monster movie where they're supposed to look behind them and see the monster and get
it's
scared.
Like a God, yeah, like an old school Godzilla movie where Godzilla is smashing, you know, Tokyo. Well, no, it's just a guy in a lizard suit messing up this, you know, small display here.
Yeah.
But it was pretty terrible, I thought.
Did you notice, Phil, that when Hilda is reading, quote unquote,
yes,
she not only reads a J. Crew catalog and a
uh-huh.
Cosmopolitan.
Uh-huh.
But also flips through a copy of Inside Karate.
Oh, yeah. You know what? I used to read Inside Karate.
Did you really?
That's a real magazine. For those of you who don't know, I used to work at a library. That was my first job.
That's
my
true.
First real job. And that was one of the magazines we had. And this was back in the 90s, so I could vouch for that.
And that's where you developed your awesome dance move of the librarian, which is a lot like the shopping cart, only you're putting away books. Is that right?
Pretty much. Yeah.
No, it's totally different, and the trademark office knows it.
That's right. Yes.
Anyway, the outfits, Phil. I thought everything, nothing's that really offensive yet, but the morning after, when Zelda's having breakfast, she's wearing an all black number with like gray fur around the cuffs and the collar.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't bad. It was definitely like out of the Vesta line of clothing, but
right.
I didn't love it. I didn't hate it.
I tell you what, I was actually surprised for the ski, like the in the ski shot, mm-hmm. and as they were going to Mars. Through the portal,
yep.
I thought through the linen closet, I should say. I thought the clothes was pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
I was actually pretty surprised. I was waiting for something like, you know, neon green or
because it's
you know,
the '90s and it's
pink.
Like a snow sport,
right? I'm looking for like an early '90s like neon color, and it wasn't. And I was actually surprised. I was like, wow. Like, they're wearing something that most skiers would probably still wear now. But as we'll see here later on, where, you know, when we start seeing more people and in later shots, some of the sweater action going on is a disaster.
Man, I'm glad you said it before I did. All
I mean,
right.
It's beyond a disaster. It's like a train wreck.
Let's go to the phones, Phil. At the phone, we see Chris Elliott making a call with a handkerchief over the receiver and speaking so loudly about not stopping until he finds the policy holder.
There's no sign of the policy holder yet, but I will not rest until said policy holder has been found. Now I can't talk. There's somebody here. Okay, goodbye. I love you. No, I just said that to throw them off. Yep, you hang up.
As Sabrina stands behind him, he freaks out, saying he can't talk anymore, someone's here, before throwing in an I love you to confuse the definite spy, Sabrina. He hangs up, wipes his fingerprints, and gives her the phone, but she says she won't use it or won't need it for another 12 hours, which Elliot writes down in a notebook as he walks away, noting it's interesting. As Sabrina starts a journal entry for February 5th, every background actor from Baywatch walks up. Just every one of them. And what's hilarious is, I didn't even know this actor had a big starring role on Baywatch. I wrote this before that and I was like, yeah, you definitely did do Baywatch a lot. Anyway, a big hunky tanned man walks up to Sabrina saying that her aunt booked a ski lesson for her, but Zelda said that she wasn't sure if Sabrina would be interested. Seeing big hunky ski man, whose name we soon find out is Doug, she definitely is interested and starts kind of like just wanting to hump his leg, basically. She says that she's ready to go ski, but first she makes sure that she'll be back within 12 hours. And once she's sure that they will be, off to the slopes they go.
I will be back in 12 hours, won't I?
Unless you're really uncoordinated.
Huh, then let's go.
Elsewhere in the lodge, Chris Elliott asks if he can sit next to Hilda, as she says it's a free planet. He starts flirting with her, noting that he's a successful insurance salesman with a huge expense account, but she cuts him off, saying that all you lodge wizards are the same.
I couldn't help but notice you from across the room there. My name is Warren. I'm a very successful insurance salesman, and I am on an expense account you would not believe.
Oh, please. You lodge lizards are all alike. Look, we can chat, but not if you spend the next 4 days making up stories just to impress me.
Well, I would
never
make
a pact. For once, two strangers meeting on vacation will be completely honest with each other. Okay?
Okay. You got it.
Great.
I'm a secret agent.
She adds that they can talk, but only if he's completely honest. Elliot agrees and starts telling her about his life as a secret agent. Warren explains that he's here to sniff out a counteroperative before asking if Hilda is said counteroperative. She isn't, which he's glad to hear, as now he doesn't have to kill her. He gets in a quick, "Are you married?" before we cut to Sabrina and Doug on the slopes. She says that she's never skied before, but Doug says she'll be great at it and zaps her in the head. So now she's ready to ski. Apparently it's a quick lesson, but it's incredibly expensive. We then get a bit more green skiing, very hard to say, green screen skiing, complete with Sabrina swallowing some fake snow. Phil.
Yes, sir.
Chris Elliott.
Chris Elliott, probably the world's ugliest sweater.
Oh, man. You know what's funny is, it's not a great sweater. It is very late 90s, and it's very, like, ski lodge design.
Right.
I hated Doug's sweater far more.
Really?
Yeah, I think part of it is because Doug is wearing a white mock turtleneck under his sweater.
Yes.
David Chikachi from Baywatch here as Doug. It's a big sweater. I said there's a turtleneck under it. It's like black with like white and yellow on the arms. I didn't like it at all. It's got a Russian eagle on the arm. It was weird.
I didn't think it was that. I mean, I didn't think it was as bad as Warren's was.
Yeah.
As Chris Elliott's. I mean, Chris Elliott's, it was red and black, and it was just like, it had designs and it was everywhere. I mean, it was like a kaleidoscope gone amok, literally. Like you're looking through a kaleidoscope and just put it on a sweater.
To be fair to Doug, this is by far not the worst thing he wears.
That's true.
his outfits get worse as time goes by.
They do. But yeah, I mean, and another question I had. So I'm guessing we're still on the other realm, right? Is it Mars? Because are these people in Mars, or is it witches in Mars, or what are these people in Mars?
Here's the thing, Phil. It's best to not question where the other realm is and where it exists, because it's supposed to be in a different dimension, I think, because I think it's, I don't know, but
so I'm guessing it's Mars in a different dimension.
I don't know. Like the feeling you get from this episode is that it's just our Mars.
Okay.
So
if it's our Mars,
yeah,
and not another realm Mars, I mean, why are there secret agents in Mars? And if they're from the other realm, why? I didn't know that the other realm would have secret agents.
I don't know. Like these are the questions that it doesn't help to think about. Like, why is it that Sabrina and Doug can just go out on a picnic on Mars's surface, which is probably incredibly cold?
Pretty much. And then they look at the Mars rover later on. But
yes, they do.
But that was something that I questioned, and I thought that, you know, since you're the all-knowing, all-being, all-seeing of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, I thought maybe you might have some kind of insight to it, but I did not mean to stump you in any
way. No, it's fine. My advice is just don't dig too deep.
Don't think about it.
Anyway, Phil, Chris Elliott, I think that everything he does on this episode is actually really kind of hilarious.
I thought Chris Elliott is definitely the highlight of this episode. Absolutely.
I mean, he's super convincing as the delusional guy trying to convince people he's a secret agent.
Right.
But he's also most funny at like the very end of his lines. Cause like, in the scene we just talked about, he tells Hilda all about being a secret agent. And then he says, "Oh, I'm glad I don't have to kill you." And then he laughs for a minute and he's like, "Sorry, married." And then we just cut away. He's got fantastic delivery. His character is really fun to watch. And I think he and Caroline Ray actually have a really fun interplay between the two.
I'm here to sniff out a counteroperative. You're not it, are you?
No.
Good. I'd hate to have to kill you. So, are you married?
I just think it just speaks to the type of actor that he is. I mean, you could see it that he's, you know, he can nail the lines and he can nail the facial expressions and the feeling that needs to be in for that character.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see him as being that way. So kudos to him for that.
Absolutely. Also, I do like how, to kind of subvert expectations with teenage girls here, I mean, it's really kind of fun to see Sabrina get all like Tex Avery auga about a guy.
Yeah. It almost looks like she, you know, she's thinking of Harvey. Ooh, who's this? Harvey who? Pretty much. So it's right. Like, you know,
it's nice that she doesn't have to fall in love over the course of like five episodes. She can just like drool over a guy.
Right. So it actually made you think, like, you know, well, maybe she, you know, maybe she can be that way, you know, maybe she doesn't have to, you know, know the sentimental side of a guy or anything like that. Like, oh, he's a hot guy, I like him, you know.
And it's a good lesson for teenage girls.
Yes,
you too can drool over a guy.
Just drool over a guy. It's okay. Don't marry him. Just drool
That's
over
right.
him.
One last thing. The ski lesson Sabrina gets.
Yes.
This is the kind of magic that makes me question why any witch would ever have any problem in their life ever.
Right. So I guess it kind of answers a little bit of my question, because it has to be in the other realm, because, you know, Doug is a witch. Because Doug did it. You know, Doug's like, bang, now you know how to know. You know how to do this now.
So, but, I mean, witches exist in the mortal realm.
That's true. So, I don't know. In any case, like you said, don't think about it, so it's no big deal.
That's right.
But it's, but yeah, we meet Doug, we meet, you kind of see that Doug is kind of more of, pretty much he's got a couple, he just basically has rocks in his head and doesn't really think very much of anything.
He likes skiing.
I like skiing.
All right. Phil, back at the lodge.
At the lodge.
Hilda recites Warren's mission about trying to stop Dr. Cyclops from destabilizing the Balinese government.
So let me get this straight. Your mission is to bring down Dr. Cyclops, who, through his ring of operatives, is trying to destabilize the Balinese government.
Yeah, plus there's some unbelievable stuff that I just can't tell you about.
Hilda then sarcastically asks if Dr. Cyclops is a psychiatrist, but Warren tells her that it's just a code name, and he hates it. She then asks where all his secret spy gadgets are, and he shows her his toothpick, his poisoned toothpick, which Hilda mocks with a corn on the cob joke.
A toothpick?
A poisoned toothpick.
Perfect, especially if Dr. Cyclops just had corn on the cob.
Just then, Sabrina and Doug arrive, and as he goes to get them some hot chocolate, Hilda says that she's just in time for their family dinner. But Sabrina tells her that she and Doug just wanted to snuggle up by the fire and relax, in front of the volcano, mind you. And she also lets her know that she just saw Zelda out on the slopes, and she said that she was going night skiing. Hilda resolves to then have a family dinner on her own, but Warren interjects, noting that they're not family yet, but offers to take her to dinner. After agreeing to let her try his entree, Hilda accepts the offer and off they go. Doug and Sabrina soon sit down by the volcano, and as he gives her some marshmallows for her cocoa, we get an eruption as Doug sits oddly spread eagle. he really does. Go back and watch it. It's quite uncomfortable.
The little marshmallows.
That's right. You said it. Doug asks if she wants to play cribbage, and after another magical lesson, Sabrina says she's ready to skunk him, which he says might take a while. Seb says she's got all the time in the world, just as we get a cutaway to a patient Harvey waiting for Sabrina's call with his guitar. As the clock strikes 8:59, Harvey pulls the phone close to his crotch and smiles. For some reason. Sabrina and Doug then talk about their talking pets, his dog and her cat, and Doug legitimately has never had a cat in his life.
I don't believe this. You have a talking dog? I have a talking cat.
Really? Don't pets make the best of friends? I mean, you get total loyalty, unconditional love.
You've never had a cat, have you?
Just then, disco music starts playing, and the lights go down, and Doug explains that at night the lodge turns into a cheesy disco. He asks her if she wants to dance, and she says yes, likely wanting to show off those sick Vesta dance skills. They boogie for a while as we see Harvey going crazy in his room waiting for Sabrina's call. Phil.
Yes, sir.
The first thing I wrote down here is, for no reason at all, Doug returns from skiing in a totally different, though less abhorrent, sweater.
So he returns in and they sit for some, by the volcano, I guess, for some reason.
How can that volcano exist in an ice lodge?
It makes no sense. But then they sit there and they're talking about, he's like, do you want some cocoa? She goes, yeah, with marshmallows, the little ones. So, like, yeah, what do? You're going to pick a big marshmallow in the middle of your hot cocoa?
It's
Sabrina.
It's like that Simpsons episode where Bart puts his own marshmallow in his cocoa and it just absorbs it all.
Yes. And then he has to, like, slice it and eat it.
Give me a slice. Oh, God.
But I think the greatest scene out of the whole episode is got to be Harvey's room. Okay.
Yes.
So
we find out he's a Patriots fan.
Okay, so we're gonna get into real detail here. Okay. So what do we see in Harvey's room? So we see that he's definitely a I wrote, Harvey's room is a Bostonian boy's dream.
Literally
has, it has a Patriots sign, so it has a parking only for Patriots fan sign. Okay. Mm-hmm. It has a lamp with a Patriots helmet. Okay. Yeah. It has a poster of a Patriots players. I couldn't tell what player it was, but it has definitely a poster, and it's not Brady, because Brady was a little bit later on. So, yeah. I don't know who it is.
The man likes his football.
He does. But the greatest thing that I found on his wall, are you ready?
I am
ready. Did you notice it?
I didn't. I have another note about something in his room.
The greatest pendant was a pendant from the New England Revolution.
God.
So, if you are an MLS fan, you would know who the New England Revolution is. It's their MLS soccer team. That plays at basically the Patriots Stadium, at the Gillette Stadium. But he has a pendant of them. So it's basically like, let me throw any tchotchke that has to do with New England on a wall here, and we're going to show that this is Harvey's room and he's a boy.
What are you saying? What are you saying? A teenage boy in the mid-90s didn't care about soccer a lot?
Absolutely. The New England Revolution was absolutely someone you'd want to cheer for back in the 90s.
Sure. My note about something hilarious in Harvey's room was behind his bed. Yeah, you root for your own home team, Phil.
Go Metro Stars.
Behind his bed, there's like a bookcase.
Yes.
One of the books is Ruby by V.C. Andrews, a novel about an innocent bayou girl lost in New Orleans and her dead mother, mysterious father, and love affair with the wealthy and handsome Paul Tate. Harvey is not reading that fucking book.
It's for when the girls come over. Looks like he's an intellectual.
Oh, man.
God. Hold on a second. I need to get rid of all this Patriots gear and this Revolution pendant. And let me set this book up here.
God. Fooling no one, set designers.
I tell you what, though. That made my episode, though. When I saw all that stuff, I literally had to pause it and just start writing down what I saw. It was so good.
Let's talk about the dancing for a second, Phil, in the lodge. God.
The most terrible dance sequence I mean that I've seen on this show to date.
Listen, I don't know if Melissa Joan Hart can dance or not.
I thought she had two left legs, but
the thing is, she's either doing a great job of playing a character who's really awkward and bad at dancing, or she's just really awkward and bad at dancing. At one point, Doug starts bowing down to how white a dancer she is. And her lack of rhythm.
You want to see some white people dancing? Look at the background dancer, the background actors dancing.
Mm-hmm.
No one is dancing to the music, and I can understand why they probably added the music in later. I understand.
Yep.
But it is the whitest dancing, the most unrhythmic dancing you have ever seen.
Maybe the best part of that whole dance montage or dance, it's cut a lot. It's a montage. The music that they're actually playing is clearly just a really poor ripoff of David Bowie's Let's Dance.
Yep.
At one point, the singer says, "Let's dance."
What's going on?
They turn the lodge into a cheesy disco at night. You want to dance?
Sure.
All right.
And see, this is what... I know this is definitely your forte. You love this music that they add in.
I do, yes.
So, it was just...
I was in heaven here. All right. Phil, by 11:08, Harvey is so beside himself that he calls the Spellman House, where Salem has thrown a cat bacchanal, or bacchanal. That is the most clever joke I'll ever make. If you've never heard the word bacchanal, it's a word I've been wanting to use in something for the longest time, and getting a cat pun in there. I'm patting myself on the back. I don't even care if the listener liked it. Anyway. Thank you.
Slow clap.
Salem's thrown a big cat party, and instructs someone to make a science diet run. Salem answers the phone as Harvey explains that he knows Sabrina isn't home, but was hoping to get a message to her. Salem says if it's short, as he has nothing to write with. And Harvey just says that the message is, I'm going to sleep now and maybe I'll talk to her tomorrow. Salem says he's got it, and Harvey hangs up as we see Sabrina dancing and doing some more middle-age standard moves, including the ooh, ooh. She's so hip. The next morning, Sabrina walks up to Hilda, acting as if she's in a lot of disco-related pain, as Hilda tells her that she had a message at the front desk to call Salem. When she does, he, after shaking off his cobwebs, tells her that Harvey left her a message and explains it to her, and while she's initially confused, she soon realizes her forgetfulness.
Harvey called last night and asked me to tell you he was going to sleep.
Weird. I wonder what. Oh my God, I totally forgot. I gotta go.
You're welcome.
I'm such a jerk.
Sabrina then frantically calls Harvey and apologizes immediately, adding that she must have been on Mars or something. Get it? He says it's not like he was waiting by the phone. The phone was waiting by his crotch. No. And he is soon glad to hear that her mittens remained minded. Doug soon saunters up, that's the word I'm going to say, interrupting before noticing she's on a call, leading Harvey to ask who that is. She explains that it's her ski instructor and that he's fine. He's not super hunky at all. He then gives her the big news.
Hey, I got all new socks and two new shirts yesterday.
That's great. I can't wait to see them. Okay. Bye.
He got all new shirts and socks, which she says is great, but then she immediately hangs up the phone, so I think we all know what Sabrina actually thought. She thought he was insane and wanted to get off the phone. Anyway, after hanging up, Sabrina is soon skiing after Zelda, calling her name, eventually catching up to her at a coffee stand. Sabrina goes on to explain that she has a serious problem, as Doug asks her to go on a picnic, but Zelda just says that seriously, that sounds like fun. I do love that delivery by Beth Broderick.
I have a very, very serious problem. Doug asked me to go on a picnic with him tonight.
Well, seriously? That sounds like fun.
Sabrina tells her that she wasn't planning on having fun, but then she met Doug and she doesn't want to hurt Harvey. Zelda tells her basically to weigh her desires to go out with Doug against her desire to not hurt Harvey. Phil.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about the most important thing here. Zelda's skiing outfit.
Yes.
I thought it looked great.
You're talking about the white ski outfit that she was wearing as Sabrina was catching up to her?
Exactly right, yes.
Yeah, I think that was, you know, I didn't remember it from, I really don't remember this episode very well. Mm-hmm. I've watched it a couple of times so we could talk about it on the podcast. And every mm-hmm. time, it's amazing how good that thing looks on her.
It is, it's, you know what, it's gorgeous. It's all in design too, because that coat is really, really awesome. I mean, there are some quilted accents. It's stark white. The whole outfit is white. She's got like a white furry headband. It looks fantastic on her. It's like one of my favorite things she's worn all season. Also, Danger Will Robinson Danger, Doug's hideous silver coat.
Ugh. I mean, it's kind of like a matte silvery color.
Oh, it's so bad.
And it's just like, you're like, why? Why would you wear such a thing?
It's a weird length. It's because it's not a jacket, but it's not really long enough to be a coat.
Right.
It's it is like a dull kind of silver.
Right. It's not like a shiny silver or like a bright. It's like a dull, like almost like a. Like a pewter color, and you're like, I mean, why would you wear this?
I get the idea is to like kind of make Doug look spacey because they're in space.
I mean, it almost does look like a space suit. I mean, it really does.
That's what I think they're going for, but my God, it just looks ridiculous. He is trying to attract a girl, right?
I mean, the only thing he was missing was the space helmet, and he'd been set.
Yeah, shockingly, he doesn't need to wear one of those to go on a picnic on Mars, but whatever.
I know. I mean, who are we to talk about, you know? No atmosphere.
But yes, anyway, Sabrina throwing down some more 90s white girl dancing moves here.
She busted
incredible
move.
Moves. Incredible moves as all. Anything else to throw in here, Phil?
Not really, no.
All right, then let's get to some more Sabrina fun stuff, because...
Oh, yeah.
While talking to Zelda, she says that she could just never tell Harvey that she went on a date, but Zelda tells her that it's a bad idea, as relationships are hard enough as it is. But ultimately, it's Sabrina's choice to do whatever she wants. Back at the lodge, Zelda runs into Hilda and tells her about all her awesome skiing, in turn revealing her Irish suntan on her face, which left some pretty stark goggle marks. Warren soon comes up discussing enemy transmissions before spotting Zelda and asking who she is. When she hears that she's Hilda's sister, Warren makes an insurance joke before trying to kickstart the family dinner.
Who's she?
My sister.
Who are you?
Warren. He's a...
insurance salesman. Are you covered?
Just kidding.
Okay, let's go to the family dinner.
Zelda asks about Sabrina, but Hilda says that she went off with Doug, and Zelda just hopes that she made the right choice. In the best crater on Mars, Doug sets up a blanket as he explains how, after skiing season, Mars is mostly just full of witch townies.
Mars is so cool. You're lucky you get to live here all the time.
It's not that much fun. After the season's over, it's just a lot of witch townies.
I love the phrase townies. This instantly bumped the rating of this episode up one notch on my scale. As they smile for the Mars probe, Doug, thinking Sabrina is cold, offers to put his arms around her, but she decides to just put her arms around herself.
Rejected.
Man, the problem is he doesn't get the hint soon enough.
Are you cold?
No, I'm all right.
You sure? Because I'm... put my arm around you.
That's okay. I can just put my arms around myself.
Doug starts sensing she's uncomfortable. Go figure. But when she says that she's enjoying herself, he tells her that he likes her before trying to kiss Sabrina and promptly getting turned down.
What are you doing?
I was gonna kiss you.
Kiss me? What? I don't even know you that well. I mean... it hardly seems right to kiss someone when you haven't even shaken hands.
Sabrina says that it's odd to kiss someone before you even shake hands. This leads Doug to shake her hand like he was approving her for a mortgage.
Congratulations on your car.
He shockingly does not get a kiss, as Sabrina tells him that she's had better. An offended Doug then tries again with no glove, but gets no love. She goes on to explain about Harvey and how his handshake makes her feel before saying that Doug's is a little clammy. Clam shake.
Look, it's not your fault. There's a guy back on Earth named Harvey, and, well, when I shake his hand, I feel all tingly, and when I shake yours, well, frankly, it's a little sweaty.
He's not.
I'm sorry, but I have to be honest.
Sabrina asks if... he wants to go back to the lodge, but he says no, as they're still friends. She agrees, and he gives her a friendly handshake, which makes no impression on her at all. We then see Sabrina calling Harvey, asking if he can come over when she gets back to town. He agrees, as Zelda calls for her as they have to leave the lodge. Phil?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's talk about the crater scene here.
Yeah, so they go on their picnic. Doug tries to get a little fresh. Doug's like, "Oh, let me give you a hug here.
My jacket is so metallic-y. Come on."
I know. I mean, yeah, just get a little closer here, and gets rejected.
Deservedly so.
But we learn that Sabrina gets a tingle when Harvey she shakes Harvey's hand.
Yep.
That, and she doesn't get that tingle from Doug.
I don't think anybody's getting a tingle from Doug, tell you God's honest truth.
I think, you know what? I think he can give somebody a tingle, but it ain't going to be Sabrina.
Yeah. As a side note, take note, young men of America. If you want to kiss Melissa Joan Hart, it takes more than a ham sandwich. This
yes,
is what
that's
he,
true.
This is what he brings on the fucking big picnic to woo his interested party. A ham sandwich.
I mean, they are in Mars, though. I mean, how do they get the ham to Mars? I don't know.
Astro pigs? What else?
Astro pigs. That's right.
I you know what? By this point, I kind of turned the corner on the hand fucking thing. I think it's kind of a fun analogy for obviously sex, which this episode uses. And I think it is an interesting little like driving force for Sabrina wanting to pick Harvey, as you know, he makes me feel so excited and tingly just from a handshake, and by comparison this cyborg over here doesn't do a thing for me.
I mean, he literally is like a man with like rocks in his head.
Mm-hmm. Also, what's this actor's name? David Chikachi, is that what I said?
Chikachi, yes.
Yeah. At one point when he's sitting in this crater, his skin is the same color as the crater. He's just so incredibly over-tanned that it sort of blends in.
Yeah. You know, something I really didn't touch on before, and I want to touch a little bit on now because you kind of see it, mm-hmm. is the pink sky.
Yeah.
I mean, how terrible do the pink sky look?
It looks really bad in the scenes when people are supposed to be skiing.
Yeah.
And it's obviously like stock skiing footage that they had yes. to like somehow doctor to put in the pink sky. It looks really bad.
I mean, I think literally what happens, like you said, they're like, oh, let's just get stock skiing footage and just, I need you to make that blue sky pink. Okay. Just mess around with the hue on it and make it pink, because that's literally what it looks like. And it looked terrible.
It does. And it's not like it adds, I mean, it's probably what the sky on Mars actually looks like, but it's not like if the sky was blue, I would have been like, well, this is patently unbelievable.
But see, the sky on Mars probably isn't pink. It's probably just like clear. So what they should have went was for like a white sky. Like, I just need you to make this white.
Yeah.
Okay. Or black. If they just made it black, like, oh, I need you to make a black sky back here because it's like the emptiness of space. Okay. Perfect. But they went with pink, and I understand why. You know, the red planet, and, you know, girls like pink, I guess, so let's make it pink.
Exactly. I do also think the crater set kind of looks about as good as you'd expect it to. Like, they clearly spent the vast majority of their set budget on the lodge, and rightfully so. But
right,
like,
I mean, you didn't really need too much. I mean,
it's a short scene.
It's a short scene, and it's a crater. I mean, okay. I mean, what do you want us to do here?
Very true. Mm-hmm. So, Phil, Zelda.
Yes.
She then spots Hilda worrying as Warren said that he would come by and say goodbye before they left. Seeing her sister in such a state of worry, Zelda just makes a sick all-state burn.
It's weird. Warren said he'd be down to say goodbye.
Well, maybe he was captured by the evil agents from all-state.
Gets her real good.
She does get it in there. On the old state.
Hilda says that she doesn't care if Warren lied about everything, as he was entertaining, so it's fine. That's my excuse for when I lie to people. Warren then runs up and says that he was instructed to abort his mission, but that he wanted to say goodbye to her, and asks for Hilda's number, giving her his pen before realizing that it's his vaporizing gun. She scoffs at this and writes down her number. Just then, we hear a cracking, and Warren is soon encased in a blue-white tube, telling us that this is the work of Dr. Cyclops, as he is soon shrunk into like a torso-less horrifying monster. As he's being beamed away, he says that he'll always remember Hilda unless they remove his brain. Which is a fair, you know, addendum to add, because, I mean, give the guy a break. He has no brain.
I'll call you. Did you hear that?
What an odd noise.
Oh no.
What's going on?
This is the work of Dr. Cyclops.
She really knows how to pick them.
Oh, oh, oh. memory, Hilda. Unless they remove my brain.
I don't believe it. I guess he really was a secret agent.
A shocked Hilda soon figures that he must have really been a secret agent. She then marvels at how he was totally honest, and when Zelda says that you can bet he'll call, Hilda remorsefully wishes that she had just given him her real number. Back at home, Sabrina walks into her thoroughly trashed room, where Salem is trying to wake up Fluffy. I've been trying to wake up Fluffy for... All right. Anyway, Salem says someone brought catnip, but it was not his fault and he had nothing to do with it. But as the doorbell rings, Sabrina tells him to just clean this mess up and crack a window, as it probably smells a lot like cat piss. Even with cats that aren't drunk and lying around, your house tends to smell like cat piss after a while. Harvey arrives as Sabrina answers the door, showing off his new shirt and socks and wanting to take Sabrina down to the slicery to show him off. But she says they have to talk.
We need to talk.
Talk?
Yeah. See, I want us to have a completely honest relationship.
Okay.
And the truth is, when I was on my ski vacation, something kind of happened.
Oh?
I met this amazing guy.
You did?
But he wasn't as amazing as you. And going out with him made me realize I like you better.
She also notes that she wants them to have an honest relationship before revealing that she met someone amazing while skiing, but that Harvey is more amazing and girthier. So, no, that's my little addition. So, people in the future are going to be like, my God, she really said girthier? She didn't. Sabrina soon says that she realizes now how much she likes Harvey. Sabrina tries to then quickly rush them to the slicery, but Harvey says he has something to tell her, that the next time she goes out with somebody she likes less than him, don't tell him. Which is honestly, I think, what most guys would prefer.
The best advice ever. Don't tell me.
Honestly. If you're picking me, just let me assume that you've already picked me.
Yes.
She agrees to this, and they shake hands one last time before Harvey leads the way to the slicery, leaving Sabrina just soaking in her snow boots. Phil.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Let's talk about the Warren shrinking scene.
You were talking about, you know, Dr. Cyclops finally found Warren. So this blue light is emitted into the snow chalet or the snow lodge.
Yep.
And he kind of like, you said it was like torso-less, like the bottom. It almost looked like he was like turned into a midget.
Kind of, yeah.
Like,
but his head is still like totally proportioned.
It's totally proportioned, right? So like his head's still big, but his arms and his legs are just like been shrunk. And then the thing that basically drew my eye in that scene was Hilda's leopard coat and hat.
Yes.
It was just hideous. It was just like, wow. Like, this is something I can see, you know, some 90s rapper buying who had way too much money and was just like, I'm going to buy this disgusting thing. You know why? Because I can.
This jacket will be notorious.
And I just paid $75,000 for it because it's a real cheetah.
Listen, animal prints are like knives. When used correctly, they're incredibly valuable. However, you use them improperly and they're deadly.
It was literally terrible.
Yeah, it was also baggy and like sack-like on her.
It was the worst thing ever. I mean, it was awful.
No, it was not good. One thing I wanted to add on the Warren scene.
Yes.
Right before he starts getting encased in that blue like tube.
Yes.
He starts. Chris Elliott starts like shaking, like he's already encased in the tube, and then they put the tube in afterwards. So it's like he either missed his cue or went too early because he's shaking a little bit, and then the tube hits him.
I was probably poor editing on their part. Like, they were supposed to edit it in there and just didn't.
I still love it. I still like just the fact that he's shaking ahead of time. I love that so much.
I'm convulsing. Oh, here comes the tube.
Yeah. And again, we do get another really honestly kind of sweet scene between Harvey and Sabrina. And I think this one is so much improved by the staging. Like, the shot of the two of them just having this conversation side by side on this kind of tight stairway, really, yeah. It's not only really kind of sweet because it puts them so close together, but it also kind of illustrates the uncomfortable conversation they're having.
Yeah, and it kind of shows that you kind of see them literally, like, this is almost, like, they're almost there. Like, it's almost opening up to where one of them can confess how they feel about the other. Like, yep. you could almost see here they are. Like, it's, I could see it in front of you, but we're just going to shake hands and go to the slicery.
I can also tell you the next episode is called First Kiss, so we're very close.
Well, it's also the Valentine's Day episode.
Yeah. Anything else to add here, Phil?
No, I think we pretty much hit it. It's right. They come back. Sabrina basically, you know, yells at Salem for the way her room looks. He blames catnip for why it's all ajar.
Yeah.
But I think that was funny. And then, like you said, we have Sabrina confessing about Doug, but telling Harvey that, you know, she'd rather be with him than Doug.
Yep.
And like you said, Harvey says, you know, just don't tell me next time.
Smart strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Phil, as the credits roll, we see Warren on an operating table surrounded by some menacing doctors and trying to convince them that he's just an insurance salesman. He grabs his notebook to crunch some numbers on a term life policy, but uses his pen-shaped vaporizing gun to zap them all, ending with the honestly incredible line, "In your eye, Dr. Cyclops," as we close. Phil, just any quick things you want to say about the this closing operating table scene?
It's as being a Bond connoisseur, it's a little reminiscent of Goldfinger when, you know, James Bond is there about to get, you know, cut in half, mm-hmm. by Goldfinger.
A little bit
reminiscent of that. But it is funny, like you said, what he said, "In your eye, Dr. Cyclops." I kind of chuckled at that. That was pretty good.
I also liked the fact that one of the four doctors threateningly standing over Warren was black, because I think that it sends a good message to children of color that if they work hard, they can grow up to torture secret agents too.
That's right. Why be an NBA star? One day you can also be a menacing doctor.
That's right. Get your doctorate and then go. I don't know where you meet supervillains, but a bar maybe, I guess.
Supervillain bar?
Yeah, probably. Anyway, that's where the episode ends, Phil. You do know, however, that we rank each episode of Sabrina the Teenage Witch on a very important scale, the TGIF scale, This Good I Feel scale. If you had to rank this episode, Mars Attracts, the episode, of course, where Sabrina has some strife on Mars. That's the title. What would you rank it as, Phil? A 1 out of 5? A You Wish? 2 out of 5? A Teen Angel? A 3 out of 5? A Hanging with Mr. Cooper? A 4 out of 5? A Family Matters? Or a 5 out of 5? A Boy Meets World?
Well, Al, I think out of all the episodes so far, this is probably one of the least memorable episodes. I think it's one of the ones that really, when you think of Sabrina the Teenage Witch, you don't even remember, to be honest with you. I couldn't even remember it. I'm probably going to have to go with watching it. I'm probably going to have to go with the Teen Angel and 2 out of 5. And the only reason I'm going to give it that high is because Chris Elliott actually came out and he actually, I think, helped the episode. Because if they didn't have Chris Elliott, I think it's definitely a 1 out of 5 episode.
I agree with you with the Chris Elliott thing. I have it at 3 out of 5. I think that the set is really well done. I think there are some really fun jokes in it. I like the Mitten Minders. I think it's a good scene for the Harvey Sabrina, the good episode rather, for the Harvey Sabrina relationship. I did really like the interplay between Chris Elliott and Hilda, and we get some wonderful outfits for Zelda. So it certainly doesn't leave a huge impression. I think there's really not any stakes in the episode. I mean, the idea is that they're teasing that maybe Sabrina won't date Harvey anymore and she'll run off with Doug, but I don't know if anyone really buys that. It is a pretty run-of-the-mill, middle-of-the-road episode for me. 3 out of 5, a hanging with Mr. Cooper. But the main event, Phil. Thank you. The Back of the Linen Closet Award, our episodic award for each episode's biggest fashion flop. Phil, what are you putting in the back of the linen closet this episode?
Well, Al, there were a lot of memorably bad things. There were sweaters.
Mm.
There were reflective coats.
Mm.
But I think the one that should have stayed on Mars and not come back was Hilda's leopard print coat and hat.
Fair.
I think she should have left it there. She should have, you know, found a crater and just thrown it in there and just set it ablaze because it was a disaster. And that's the one I'm going to go with.
An absolutely fair choice. I think that as bad as it was, I can't discount the hideousness of Doug's very silver coat. It's so odd for so many reasons because, like I said, he's trying to impress a girl and this is the coat he wears. Also, he looks like a really dumb spaceman. And it's, to me, it kind of seemed like he thought Sabrina was a very small bird because that's the only kind of thing that would be attracted to such a reflective coat. No one should have ever made that coat. It doesn't belong on TV. It doesn't belong on people in the winter. I don't want to think about it anymore. It's making me angry. Doug's coat's going in the back for me.
So it looks like we put two coats in the back of the closet.
Where they belong. Phil, I want to thank you so much for being on the show this episode.
Al, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate you inviting me again. And it's always a pleasure to be here with you and your listeners.
Pleasure to have you every time on Sabrina's Witch Trials, every time we can get you. Phil doesn't like to plug things, so we won't let him plug anything, but I will tell you, you can follow Sabrina's Witch Trials on Twitter at Sabrina Podcast, on Facebook, facebook.com/Sabrina's Witch Trials, instagram.com/Sabrina's Witch Trials, on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/Sabrina's Witch Trials. You can listen to us there or on TuneIn, Stitcher, iTunes, the Google Play podcast section, and pretty much everywhere you get a podcast, your favorite podcatcher, all those places. You can also like, subscribe, and comment on all those podcasts in all those places, and you really, really should. And if you work for Harry's, you can tell me how much money you want to give me in all those places. Probably $5.
Harry's.com.
I did promise to get one last taint in here before we wrapped up. The next episode, as I said, will be episode number 17, First Kiss, and see if you can guess the plot to that episode, folks. But until then, I will say thank you one last time for listening to this episode of Sabrina's Witch Trials, and we will see you in the other realm.
Now, let's just say that you're a 30-year-old non-smoker with a good job and a decent medical program, and your estimated time to die is now! And your eye, Dr. Cyclops!